Williams, and you hear from Mr. Murray. Mr. Murray, is there any corrections or clarifications you wish to make to the pre-circulated evidence?
No, Mr. Chairman.
And Ms. Miao, sorry, I should have asked you that question. Any corrections or clarifications?
No.
Mr. Murray, no corrections or clarifications. Any points you wish to highlight, or are you happy to us?
Just go straight to two questions.
Okay, that's helpful, thank you. Board, we'll start at your end of the table.
Yes, I have two questions. Mr. Chairman, paragraph 66 of your evidence. The first line there, to me, you've got 300 in there, and it doesn't make sense to me.
Sorry, that's that was copied from the hearing report. And
footnote, isn't it?
Yes.
It comes out as a strange font when you cut and paste it.
Yes. Yes, so I failed in the cutting and pasting.
Turning over to 105, can we just pick up on that point of muck? And I'm just wondering whether weed and sediment excluding gravel would be better there then, or is it something you would consider against mud, as others on the panel have mentioned, that there's clarification for on-farm practices or for diggers, that to give clarification to everybody so we know what we mean.
If you put in weed and sediment removal excluding gravel, that would satisfy the Director General's concerns.
Thank you, that's all the questions
I have, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for you, and I'll ask it now. My understanding of how you clean out a drain mechanically is you just get a digger in there and you just dig it out, and then you dump it next to the drain. So I don't understand how a digger driver operating a digger, a hydraulic excavator, can not take out the sediment. And I also don't understand how they could then take that pile of drain cleanings and sort it to get the sediment out of it and then put it back into the drain. And even if they could do that, the habitat would be munted anyway. So I just really don't understand the practicality of what you're suggesting, what you're recommending to us.
Right. I've done two stream cleaning operations in Southland where I have been either part of the team doing it. One was in Currens Creek and one was on the Munro property, also in Waituna Catchment. In the second property, there'd been weed spraying for 7 years and a deep layer of mud. And the digger operator could feel as he went through the mud layer, he'd hit the gravel and then bring the scoop, the bucket up. And so he did it extremely delicately, but still very efficiently. And he says, you can just feel the pressure, and it's the different ground pressure. So I was remarkably surprised. So it can be done, it needs a good operator.
So that situation would be where there's a layer of mud on top of a layer of sediment. Is that what the department's focusing on?
Yeah, correct, on a layer of gravel, yes.
All right, so it's not where you have a mixture of different aggregates in the base of the drain and you're wanting them to be sorted?
Correct.
Right. Now that clarifies that.
Just on, you've got a few recommendations around the PG physiographics.
Yes.
And I think those recommendations or submission points are really, or in your evidence, is based on section 42A in the council zone, section 32. Or DOC haven't done any particular science work on that.
Correct, except for some work that Dr. Isman has been carrying out in the Waituna catchment on the glazed soils hold soil variation. But I also, in that case, relied on the council report completed, including the authors were Ross Monaghan, on phosphorus losses in the Waituna catchment. But primarily I relied on Dr. Smith's work.
So just clarifying that, the work that Dr. Risman's currently doing?
Correct.
You've had access to that?
Yes.
Right, thank you. No, that's all right.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I've got a few. So the first one relates to paragraph four of your, page four of your header. So you talk about adding in some words there in relation to this issue, and the words you want added are in relation to ecological services, and you want to change to ecosystem services, including protection of soil, etc. And I just wonder why.
Excuse me, Mark, sorry, can you just give us a paragraph?
Sorry. Okay, paragraph. It's on page four of the evidence. It's to do with the with one of the issues.
Sorry, Mark, I lost.
But the main doc submission.
Oh, so the submission.
Oh, the submission.
Main doc submission. So.
Oh, right. Okay.
Page four. These might be playing the legal question, Mr. Chairman, as much as planning on.
Oh.
Okay, we've got page four now. So
yes.
Which row is it? Which page?
The last, the bottom of page four.
Yes.
So it's about ecological services, which is there at the moment, and you want that change to ecosystem services and including various things. So why is that necessary to do that?
Because it is referred to in the regional policy statement. It was in the proposed, and I don't think there were any amendments to the definitions as it went through the RPS appeal process.
Okay. Thank you. Now, page six, in relation to that Bedrock Hill Country, you talk about deep drainage will also occur, but a deep drainage is not something that the plan recognises as a significant factor for hill country. I just wonder what proportion of hill country has those characteristics and what evidence you've got for that.
Right, I turn to page 680 of the hearing report in appendix B17. It recognises deep drainage of nitrogen, but it does state that it is low risk. So it's appendix B17. And I keep getting conflicting advice on that matter from Mr. Leadguard, who used to work for council. So I'm getting different science advice, and I'm unsure how to handle it.
Is that Dr. Stuart Leadguard?
No. George Leadguard, who used to work for council as a soil conservation in Environment South and here. And he said there is a risk in there.
Okay, thank you. No, that's something we can have a look at a bit more closely. Mm-hmm. On page 8 in relation to objective 10, this is something that one or two others have asked about as well. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I've skipped over a question. Could you go back to page 7? Yes, and you asked for a 10% 10% improvement. We talked about this some for a number of years here, but I just wonder how 10% improvement can be measured. Sounds objective, and there's a number there, but in reality, is that something that can be done?
Now, in the last water plan,
yep,
there was clear direction how it should be measured. However, I do not have the expertise from a water quality statistical side to say it can be measured. Okay, but I have seen, and from a planning side, I have seen work from other regional councils like West Coast Regional Council, where in their annual reports they state that where the water is improved, applied, and of course there is the LURB stuff too, the land and water stuff. So there is science available, but whether it's available in Southland is another matter.
Going to your submission on objective 13, which is on page 9. You want to add another paragraph, paragraph D, but aren't these things considered in other objectives? Why is it important to have them in this objective?
Because of the effects of land use activities on natural flow regime, and it goes back to the RPS objective on integrated management, objective water quality. Which states integrate the management of land use, water quality, water quantity, coast and air.
Okay, thank you, that's very clear. Objective 18. Turning to Rule 23, for a submission on that.
Page 26 of the submission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, it's page 26. What you're proposing is quite a lot more restrictive in terms of the permitted activity status than what the Section 42A report says and what the advertised version says. And I just wondered whether you've considered what economic and social effects your proposed changes might cause. Saying 20 hectares or 10%
of the land area. I actually based this on, and in the original submission, plus now the Section 42A report of Dr. Pearson that is attached to the hearing report, and I'm just trying to find the exact stuff. I looked at the following matters. I actually looked at the effect on other regions, in particular Otago and Canterbury, and the displacement of activities and winter grazing, because I am aware of winter grazing from Southland farms taking place in both Otago and in Canterbury. So I had a look at quick look at the rules, but very quick. And basically potentially permissible. The social circumstances, I am aware of the implications of hill country development in Otago region, and the availability of water, because the Glenkittich water supply in the neighbouring Pomahakett catchment has had not been able to supply water because of dirty water, and that's happened in the last 2 months. I have been involved in the technical advisory group on economics. However, the economic side on wintering we have not looked at. We have only looked at the nutrient losses and implications on farm profitability, and there seems to be no relationships. That's the council's own technical advisory group on economics, farm economics. And that's where wintering has the biggest effect, is on nutrient losses.
Could you explain that again a bit more, how it has an effect on social aspects or economic?
It's on the social aspects. The effect, the significant effect of winter grazing is on water quality, both through overland flow and through flow in some circumstances into the aquifers of nitrates and potentially other contaminants. What the economic project looked at, and it's Council's own project that has just recently been published, is showed that there is no relationship between high nutrient losses and high profitability. So some farms with low nutrient losses can have very high profitability. So couldn't find any relationships.
All right, thank you. That's clarified there.
Sorry, Maurice, just before you move off there, I've just got a question in my mind as you've been speaking. I just want to confirm with you that in the submission on page 26, you say 10% of the land holding, whichever is smaller. Did you mean smaller or did you mean greater?
I have been listening to Glen Eyrie Station with great interest, and I must admit that I looked at that as an example, and I think there is a potential to, and I'll go through the...
No, I just want a very short answer to a short question. Did you mean whichever is smaller, or on reflection did you, should you have written whichever is greater?
On the small farms, it should be whichever is smaller, but I think there is a different situation when you're dealing with a property of Glen Eyrie's site. But even with 10%, they've got 600 hectares, so that's 6,000. So they would still come in within that standard, because the farm's, 24 or 30,000?
68,000. 68,000, yes. Under your wording, they're limited to 20 hectares.
I think there is a matter in there that I think the panel needs to look closely at, and have a look at also the science report of Dr. Pearson, who identifies three.
I don't need any delving into science. I just wanted to clarify that you intended the word smaller, and you hadn't, by mistake, written smaller when you were thinking greater. Mm.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Just three more, Mr. Chairman. In your submission on public access, which is objective 16, sorry, I'm going back a bit now, but I can read this out so you don't need to go to it. You have asked that access take into account biodiversity by asking that the words "or significant biodiversity values are being adversely affected," but the Section 42A report notes that other objectives protect these values. Do you accept the Section 42A report, or do you still think that these words are necessary to guide public access to
the particular situation I was looking at was public access and the national critical species of black-billed gull. Right. That was the particular issue. I will now find my plan. I have enough paperwork here.
All right, taking time, is that right?
Test.
So. Just double check it. No, I do not. Objective 14 is the objective that is potentially relevant. The range and diversity of indigenous ecosystem types and habitats, including and rivers and lakes, including their margins, their life supporting capacity, are maintained or enhanced. It is a general policy, a general objective, sorry. I think I'd prefer something more specific in objective 16.
Sorry, so looking at objective 14, okay, so what you're suggesting then about that, are you saying then that these words don't need to be in objective 16, or that they do?
I think it does need to be in objective.
They do need to be there, yes. But specifically in relation to black gulls, not in relation to anything else?
The black gulls, correct.
Sure about that?
Potentially also. There is a Wildlife Act matter in there, yeah. And disturbance is an offence under the Wildlife Act. But the crucial species in Southland are black-fronted tern and black-billed gull.
Yeah, but there is others as well, dockerels and oyster
banded
stilts. Yeah. And
mm. There is quite a collection, but there are some species that are extremely susceptible to disturbance. And the primary issue is vehicle disturbance and people shooting them.
okay. Then the wetlands that you recommend be added to Appendix A, which is now Appendix A, it used to be Appendix O, I think.
Yeah, correct.
You've got quite a few there that are not in the advertised version of the plan. A lot of these are on Department of Conservation administered land. There's two parts of my question. So for those ones, is it necessary for them to be listed in this plan because they are already protected by being on DOC land?
They're not necessarily protected by being on DOC land. The degree of protection depends on the tenure. The highest tenure site, National Park, you need an Act of Parliament potentially. We're in a tenure like stewardship and say wanting to mine. An access arrangement done under the Crown and Nicholls Act.
All right, and the second part of my question on wetlands is that these ones that you propose to be added, have they been evaluated so that they are regionally significant, and how do we know that?
My botanist advised me, Brian Rance, that these wetlands had been evaluated and that they were regionally significant. One of the parts with determining wetlands as regionally significant, one must remember that nationally less than 10% of the area is present, is left of the total area, and so consequently gets down to wetlands that are left are actually regionally significant.
Right.
So I'm just going to interject again there, sorry, excuse me, Maurice. So you said you relied on technical advice from a department ecologist.
Yes.
Because you're a planner, we would need to see that technical evidence.
Yep.
So unless you can table with us a report, a memorandum, a letter or something from the actual technical expert, we probably can't take that much further. And so I'm very willing to give you leave, the Director General leave, to table such a report. It would be helpful if there is
Thank
one.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. That would be very helpful. Right, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah. I've just got a couple of matters I want to ask you about. Just turning back to the issue of Rule 78 and the discussion that we had earlier on that. And thank you for clarifying the Director General's concern, which I now understand to be a layer of mud that was overlying some in situ sediments. It appears to me that rather than amending the rule as suggested on page 40 of your evidence by replacing sediment with mud, it might be more helpful to plan users to instead, and I think this would be within scope, to have an additional condition which would more specifically target the exact situation you're concerned with. So a situation, a condition along the lines of where a layer of mud overlies a layer of in situ sediments, and these aren't correct words, and that mud is a result of land use activities and erosion, then the mud should be removed but the sediments left there if possible. Just occurs to me that might be a more fruitful way of attacking the issue. So can you give that some thought, liaise with whoever you need to liaise with from a technical perspective. And if you do feel that's a more appropriate way of addressing the Director General's concern, come back to us with some suggested wording for an additional condition along those lines. And timing wise, if you could do that within the next fortnight, that would be very helpful.
Thank you.
The other question I had was paragraph 71 of the primary evidence. You seek a new policy to protect indigenous vegetation. It's my understanding that in Southland the protection of terrestrial indigenous vegetation rests with the territorial authorities and with district plans, not with the regional council. I know around the country that differs, but my understanding is that down here the TAs assume that role. Is that correct?
That is correct, but the issue is that the TAs only look at the significance of the indigenous vegetation, not its other values of holding together the soil and the land.
So you're saying that the territorials will have regard to indigenous vegetation for its ecological value, but they don't consider soil conservation issues?
Correct.
And down here, the matter, it's not a question for you, but just to the officers in reply, that paragraph 101 Mr. Murray's evidence, he recommends to us that we decline the ES submission to increase the allocation from aquifers. I know you've addressed that in the 42A reports to date, but in reply, can you just specifically cover off that point? Just re-emphasise for us the rationale for the Environment Southland submission and respond to the Department Director General's request explicitly. And you're welcome to cross-refer to the part of the 42A report where that issue was addressed, just so we can make sure we cover that off. And that's all. Thank you very much. No further questions for me. And to the three of you, thank you very much for setting out your submissions so clearly. You put down the precise wording change you wanted, which is always helpful, and the evidence addressed those. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.